Good evening, everyone. I just thought we'd open with this little scene here. That's Chance, our oldest dog. That's Leo, the tabby cat. We call him LJ because his middle name is Jeff. And in the back is Paint. And they like to sleep together. That's the Patch household. Finley's with Kathleen tonight. Chance is very content to just sleep with his two buddies. Welcome to Sunday evening's live streams, February 18th. And as you all know, I'm Anthony Patch. No need for introduction, I guess. You all have been here forever and have earned your PhDs. It's a cold night here in the White Mountains in New Hampshire, but we certainly enjoy it. We might get a little bit of snow tonight. The title of tonight's live stream is Noisome and Grievous Sore. In other translations other than the King James, it is multiple. It is sores. In the King James, it's singular, but that's okay. Let me go ahead and read that real quickly. I'm going to read a couple of things right off at the start tonight. Revelation chapter 16, verse 2. And the first went and poured out his vial upon the earth, and there fell a noisome and grievous sore upon the men which had the mark of the beast, and upon them which worshipped his image. Now, we've cited this scripture many, many times. I want to take you through three primary topical areas tonight. We're going to use as our connection to the last several live streams a quick list of what are known as novel components, never seen before, novel components of spike protein. Okay? But we're also going to talk about Ebola. And finally, we're also going to talk about leprosy. And in fact, we'll talk about leprosy before we get into Ebola. In the discussion of spike protein, we're also going to fold in a short discussion about lipid nanoparticles, some novel information that we've not covered before about lipid nanoparticles. So spike protein, lipid nanoparticles, leprosy, and Ebola. And again, it's going to be fairly brief in terms of the discussion of this, because I want to introduce a not really new, but another concept for you to consider with regard to the mark of the beast and something else. And this something else has been getting some attention, interestingly enough, in a variety of different venues. So what is it that's been getting attention? I want to share with you from the pages of Entangled Magazine, April 2023, inverse black swan events. What is getting a lot more attention is this concept of a black swan event. I'd like to read just the short beginning of my commentary, mine and Kathleen's, from April of 2023. Inverse black swan events. Concurrent application of retrospective analysis of the SARS-CoV-2 pandemic and a real-time examination of the unfolding global economic crisis is yielding clear ideological evidence of intelligent design confirming each as planned complex events utilizing quantum computing's predictability feature. In our understanding, this is the opposite, the inverse of a classically defined black swan event. A black swan event is commonly referred to in academic, scientific, and financial arenas as being something that is unique, rare, and unpredictable. Today, however, market analysts are loosely and liberally applying the label black swan event in their characterization of the present and anticipated global economic crisis. It has also been applied to the SARS-CoV-2 pandemic. Now remember, this is April 2023. Investopedia defines a black swan as an unpredictable event that is beyond what is normally expected of a situation and has potentially severe consequences. Black swan events are characterized by their extreme rarity, severe impact, and the widespread insistence. They were obvious in hindsight. So what we are presenting and did present in April, and I'm reiterating tonight, is the concept of the inverse black swan event. And this is what I was hoping that maybe some of the other presenters out there in the media would begin to pick up on, and rather than stay with the tried and true and staid verbiage of black swan event, that they would add to it and say, no, these are inverse black swan events because they are predictable. So I would offer to those of you, and I think some of the people that I've been watching, listening, and reading who have been using black swan event, both in economic circles, military circles, economic circles, and in healthcare, that there are indications that they are in this audience, and that's great. I welcome you. I do find some of our unique identifiers in terms of words and turns of phrase and that type of thing being utilized by other presenters that sound familiar to this presenter and my wife. And that, again, is okay. We don't take umbrage with that. So if you are listening and you are carrying forward some of the things that you learn from this platform, we thank you for being here. We applaud you for learning and carrying it to your audience. But I would encourage you to apply, not because I've put the label inverse to black swan, but to consider that in presenting, in reporting, one should strive to be as accurate in the use of the words that they choose. So it would be more accurate if you're saying I or we or a group, whatever, is predicting, anticipating, expecting a black swan event of some form, but nonetheless extremely severe in its impact, to occur this year. In fact, to occur prior to the November elections, presidential elections in this country. If that is the case, if that is the case that you are making, then I would strongly encourage you to call it an inverse black swan event due to your anticipation of the event. Otherwise, you are incorrectly applying the label black swan. Okay? That's all. I mean, it's not a big deal. But we do expect an inverse black swan event this year. As we've been talking about, remember the Hegelian dialect as we present it, which is problem, reaction, solution. We are expecting the peaking of reaction by the global population due to the compression, what I like to call the coalescing, of a number of influential factors peaking that reaction that then causes the global community, meaning the majority of the global community having been vaccinated for COVID, that they are going to strongly demand a solution. And this is planned for, and this is leading to the cabal, if you will, presenting the solution in the form of an Antichrist beast system to the world, post-reset, post-taking down the internet. So all of this you've already heard before. What I'm saying here that's novel tonight is a coalescing of predictable events, events that are current and unfolding and accelerating and exacerbating and expanding, leading to this peaking of the reaction, thus the anticipation of an inverse black swan this year due to those coalescing factors. But in the discussion of the solution in the form of the Antichrist beast system, that all of this is pushing the world into as their offered solution, planned for solution, designed solution in the first place, triggered by the entire pandemic of COVID, we come to the mark of the beast again, which is an integral part of this, such that it is actually the cornerstone of the beast system. Without the mark of the beast system falls apart. Without the mark of the beast, the Antichrist beast system will not be able to materialize its goal of command and control of humanity that we have called the serf class of humanity. Without the mark of the beast, there is no serf class. The mark of the beast has been delivered in the form of the vaccine, the very first one for COVID-19, the disease as a, quote, therapeutic, for the virus as a so-called vaccine for SARS-CoV-2. Thus, the world is primed to evolve into, to be declared, to be forced into a serf class by way of the mark of the beast. The manifestations of that mark we have discussed, especially in our discussion of spike protein. Where I'd like to take you tonight is a further discussion of what we have cited, which is Revelation 16, to the grievous, the noisome, which means the very smelly, very disease-smelling sores, the necrotic process, the death of cells and skin cells, the necrosis, producing that pungent odor, noisome and grievous sore, as King James indicates at, in the singular, many other translations as grievous sores. We'd like to take you to this discussion of the manifestation of the mark of the beast as an outward manifestation that is obvious to the world, cannot be ignored by the world, and piques the reaction demanding the solution, which that solution in that Antichrist beast technology system will be the microneedle array patch as the delivery mechanism of the final solution. That because of the manifestation of these sores, I'll use the multiple, perhaps even the elect could be deceived into taking the mark of the beast by way of the microneedle array patch. This sounds like all too familiar territory, but I want to go into some new territory to add to what we've been discussing since January of 2020. Again, I'm going to some of my numerous notes I have here tonight. They get buried. This is a peer-reviewed paper from Science Direct, dated January of 2022. Multibacillary leprosy unmasked by COVID-19 vaccination. Then we're going to backstep into spike protein. Just wanted to get this out early. This is a sort of sharing the punchline with you right up front. I'm going to read a short paragraph at the end of this paper. Messenger RNA vaccination has been shown to elicit T cell responses early on, and early T cell and binding antibody responses are associated with COVID-19 RNA vaccine efficacy onset a vaccine effect. Therefore, it is plausible that T-cell mediated immune upregulation elicited by the COVID-19 vaccine may result in a type 1 leprosy reaction. However, the exact pathophysiological basis of this heightened immunologic response leading to unmasking of leprosy remains to be elucidated. Now, I'll say this. Kathleen discovered this paper. She and I started talking early today about these sores, and we began to explore into leprosy because that's from scripture, that's biblical. Because we suspected a connection there to COVID. We saw expected a connection to the mark of the beast. This is very preliminary for us. Therefore, Tuesday, we expect we will have many more papers, quite a bit more evidence to support what is being hypothesized in this early research paper, actually from 2022. So we expect there's more that we will find as we dig into it. But I wanted to present it early tonight, just as an introduction to generate some thought within yourselves about leprosy and the vaccine for COVID-19. Because we are looking at the immune system response. It appears that the immune system response for COVID is nearly identical to the immune system response for leprosy, type 1 and type 2. This gets into the macrophages, which are the antibodies produced by the innate immune system in the form of T cells. These will be CBD4 and the like that are being produced due to the presence of the COVID vaccine, which is the same response by the immune system for leprosy type 1 and 2. This paper is highlighting a specific case, an individual. And I'll read this, we'll come back to it, but he had recovered from COVID, was unvaccinated, but then once he was vaccinated, these leprosy manifestations appeared. Interesting direction. You see, the last several live streams we've been talking about spike protein, one of the other primary manifestations of spike protein, aside from all the ones that we've covered for years, we've been talking about the amyloid proteins and the white fibers found in the circulatory system during an autopsy or a embalming process. So I'm going to share some more about the spike protein, but like the spike protein, looking at two major manifestations, as I'm calling it, of spike protein, we are now seeing a manifestation of the immune system that not only is responding to the presence of spike protein, but it is doing so outwardly in the form of leprosy. So obviously you're stepping forward in the timeline here, but I'll just state it for the record, so to speak. Perhaps this black swan event being brought on, an inverse black swan event being brought on by a multiplicity of causalities that are coalescing and peaking, that what will really peak and trigger the demand for a solution will go beyond the often cited causalities that you hear of today: military, economic, political, environmental. But now, biological, peaking everything. And fitting into that perspective of an inverse black swan event being brought on by a multiplicity of reasons is this so-called treaty due to be signed by well over 120 countries in May of this year, the so-called World Health Organization Treaty, which you can interpret as a way to fast track command and control systems, global one world government command and control, to fast track that under the guise of healthcare, under the guise of an inverse black swan event, under the guise of a outbreak of perhaps leprosy, and as we're going to talk about here as well tonight, and or an outbreak of Ebola, or maybe Zika virus, because the World Health Organization has already listed that they come right out and state it and say it. You've seen it. You've seen the WHO director come right out and say, we are expecting disease X. The name disease X, they claim, is a placeholder for an unknown disease that will produce a plandemic and a pandemic, and it will be 20 times worse than COVID. And I've made the point several times recently that how can you declare a number like 20 times worse when you are not naming and citing the cause, the disease, the virus? It is evidentiary to us from a logical standpoint, from a critical thinking standpoint, that if you're going to declare a number, it's because you know what the disease is. You know what the virus or the bacteria that is going to produce a disease that will be declared as a pandemic. So they already know what it is. And they've listed the possibilities. It could be a worsened form, a mutated form of COVID. It could be Ebola. It could be Zika virus or the like. That's right from their website. So perhaps they're giving us sort of a timeline of May of this year signing this treaty. Does it mean something's going to happen in May? Does not necessarily, but certainly this year they want something to happen. So we're building the case for an inverse black swan event that will manifest as the noisome and grievous sore or sores on those that have taken at least one of the vaccines for COVID that may manifest. It may trigger Ebola. We don't know. We'll get into Ebola, as I said, in a few minutes. It may appear as leprosy. But clearly, Revelation, Scripture is telling us, those that have taken the mark of the beast will break out in these sores. And we know that they will seek death in all its forms for 5 months. Again, all familiar territory for everybody here. So what we're hoping to do here as we begin to add more to the picture of an evolving, a building inverse black swan event is the science, the biology that is going to pique the reaction of the global population. The reaction will have a number of cause and effects. It's very easy for us to imagine how people who are unaware, who don't pay attention, don't know of these things, thus are completely caught off guard when there are reports coming out or their own observations and experiences with people that are breaking out in these sores that look like leprosy. I say because I don't know if it will be separate from Ebola or with Ebola, but imagine the effects of Ebola being observed and being reported. People are going to lose their minds. Not just the people breaking out on these sores, but the people who have yet to, but are vaccinated, and they will break out in these because they've taken the mark of the beast. Then those that are unvaccinated, be they saved individuals or unsaved, but unvaccinated, and the message that they're receiving, the unvaccinated are receiving, remember, perhaps even the elect could be deceived. The message they're hearing from the mainstream media, from government and the like, is you need to take that microneedle array patch and apply it to your hand. It will deliver a vaccine against COVID, against leprosy, and against Ebola, and whatever else they come up with. This is the final solution that we have talked about since 2020. That perhaps even the elect could be deceived into being so scared because they've not been paying attention as you have. They have not been exposed to and educated in the science and the evidence that we've presented here for 4 years. And they could be deceived into slapping that microneedle array patch on themselves, and it delivers the mark of the beast. Let's go to spike protein again. Let's go back. These are the novel contents. We've talked about all the other aspects of spike protein. Let me just very quickly just kind of go down this list because I don't want to spend a lot of time on spike. We spend enough on it. So these novel contents have never been seen in any form of coronavirus. That's a family, okay? So not just SARS-CoV-2, but all of the coronaviruses. There's a new type of ACE2 receptor site. Remember, the spike protein enters into the cell through the ACE2 receptor sites that are on the outer plasma membrane of a healthy cell. Okay? And the spike protein from the virus enters that healthy cell at the ACE2 receptor site. That type of receptor site is novel. It's brand new. It's never been seen before. It's produced by the spike protein. Spike protein also produces TMPRSS2 seric protease. Okay, that's a type of protein. It also produces the NRP1 component, the glycoprotein 120 fragment, the ferrin cleavage. We've cited ferrin cleavage, we've cited GPT or GP120 before. We've cited the ACE2 receptor site before over the years. So ferrin cleavage site we have cited, and we have also cited that it is able to enter the nucleus and interrupt the DNA repair mechanism. Remember, we talked about Z-DNA with the left-hand twist, the left-hand conformation, and with that Z form of DNA, that Z form inhibits the natural DNA repair mechanism. Let me go to my list here for that Z-DNA. That was October of 2023, okay, where we covered that. Let me open it up real quick. Z-DNA, volume 77, October of 2023. The cover of this month's edition of Entangled Magazine combines two images represented in the letter Z. The capital Z harkens back to the fictitious character Zorro, who leaves his signature mark Z on people and places. The second image is of a left-handed Z-DNA RNA double helix. This nuclear co-location of novel spike RNA, spike protein, SARS-CoV-2 virus, and its accompanying vaccines, when combined, result in permanent alterations to the human genome. So you may want to go back to October of 2023 and review that. Nonetheless, we have covered that, and this is, again, one of the novel manifestations of this spike protein that is produced by the vaccine for SARS-CoV-2. None of these have been seen in coronaviruses before. What I just listed is all novel. And finally, the last one are toll-like receptors, which are pattern receptors for viruses. Okay? Now, not only do we have the spike protein with all of the adverse effects, side effects, morbidities, comorbidities, and mortality rates, we have the amyloid protein fibers that we've discussed, and now we add another novel aspect to the spike protein discussion, and that's that list of everything that I just read. And we'll go into more depth on that on Tuesday. But I just wanted to highlight that for tonight. So we have three major categories in which the spike protein manifests as novel. The concluding statement, or the conclusion to that three novel areas of manifestation by spike protein, leads us to the conclusion that the spike protein was created in a laboratory. There are too many novel aspects to just say, oh, it's a mutated form of coronavirus. It's a leap from the animal source for SARS-CoV for a coronavirus over to a human. There might be one or two novel manifestations of a spike protein. And we might accept the animal to human crossover. we've got, just in what I read to you, there's 10 of them. Then we have all the adverse effects, side effects, the morbidity and mortality rates. And then we have the amyloid protein fibers manifesting. And we haven't even touched all of the technological components that are also side by side with the spike protein in this cocktail called a vaccine. So in this cocktail, we need to also talk about lipid nanoparticles. We have over the years presented the lipid nanoparticles as akin to be similar to, fat cells, animal fat cells, human fat cells, okay? You might be more familiar with the term adipose tissue. So lipid nanoparticles provide a protective envelope around this novel in silico designed laboratory synthetically manufactured spike protein. Lipid nanoparticles are chosen as a protective envelope because you know that you have your PhDs, messenger RNA, a single strand, if left and introduced, left alone and introduced into the bloodstream of a human, there is a response by the immune system and by enzymes to destroy that messenger RNA, referred to in the literature as naked RNA. So you clothe the RNA, you put it in a lipid nanoparticle envelope. The problem with nanoparticle, the lipid nanoparticles, is akin to the problem with spike protein. Spike protein is recognized by the body as a poison. It's toxic. So too with lipid nanoparticles. It's been sort of pushed off to the side, the discussion of lipid nanoparticles, as if they're inert, that they're non-toxic, when the opposite is actually the case. Okay? Especially in people who have taken the follow-on booster shots. In the third and fourth administration of these boosters, and because it's winter here in the Northern Hemisphere, there's the offering by pharmacies for your free seasonal flu shot. And these take the form of bivalent, trivalent, quadrivalent vaccines called flu shots. Valent means there's more than one vaccine that's being combined and delivered in a single injection. These multivalent flu or influenza vaccines, and bivalent that also includes the COVID-19 vaccine with a seasonal influenza vaccine and more, is manifesting as a autoimmune reaction, especially in those that have taken multiple booster shots. There are immunoglobulins that are produced. There is a novel immunoglobulin, this is from the immune system, that manifests in those people, those individuals who've had multiple booster shots, and people that are taking seasonal flu shots that include the COVID vaccine. They are manifesting with a novel immunoglobulin 4. And this is causing a reversal where normally with IgA 1, 2, and 3, you would find with the normal macrophages, which are white blood cells, which are immune killer cells that go after poisons and toxins and viruses and bacteria. These immunoglobulins, rather than being helpful, are actually attacking healthy cells. That's an autoimmune disease response. And so it's no wonder that we're seeing now, 4 years on, and people taking booster after booster, fourth and fifth booster, and they're dropping over dead. It's because they're now in a autoimmune dynamic such that it cannot be reversed, and their healthy cells are being killed, and this is occurring body-wide. The lipid nanoparticle discussion is, there is this immune response to the lipid nanoparticles themselves being recognized as toxic. Early on in the discussion in the literature about let's protect RNA or let's use lipid nanoparticles in general as a vector, as a transporter of not only a vaccine for COVID, not only of messenger RNA, but for chemicals, for drugs, for pharmaceuticals, as a delivery mechanism. Well, the problem arises when you have too much of this lipid nanoparticle that is distributed body-wide, because the early literature that was promoting lipid nanoparticles as a vector for targeted delivery to hitherto inaccessible areas of the human body, like the brain. Remember the blood-brain barrier. That for treatment of tumors, treatment of cancers, treatment of Alzheimer's and the like, targeting difficult to access areas of the body, or in easier to access, but nonetheless specifically targeting tumor tissues or other cancerous tissues, using lipid nanoparticles that it was thought early on would remain only where they were placed. And where they were placed, they would elicit an immune response to produce specific antibodies. And the therapeutic that was delivered by the vector nanoparticles would be released from that envelope at that targeted site. It was unknown that, in fact, lipid nanoparticles would distribute throughout the body. And in that distribution, in the discussion of COVID, we have lipid nanoparticles distributing throughout the body, crossing the blood-brain barrier, reaching the brain itself, the neurons, and delivering spike protein. Again, lipid nanoparticles sort of were off here on the sidelines. Now they're coming into the center of focus, just as we're focusing on spike protein. The lipid nanoparticles themselves are toxic, causing a production of IgG4, triggering autoimmune response. Spike proteins also trigger an autoimmune response. And none of this can be reversed, because the lipid nanoparticles, once they are injected into the body, delivered into the body, they don't self-reproduce, but they do distribute throughout the body, as we said. But the spike protein does reproduce. It's not the spike protein itself that's replicating. It's what is producing the spike protein that is continuous. And that's the messenger RNA. All of the activity that we've discussed about messenger RNA over the last 4 years is continuous. It cannot be turned off. And the drug companies, Pfizer and Moderna and the like, have no intention of providing a solution to the problem of messenger RNA continuously producing spike protein. The messenger RNA itself remains in the body. Thus, it continuously produces spike protein. Therefore, it continuously elicits a response from the immune system, which now through the boosters and the boosters and the boosters, which is more spike protein, and the messenger RNA in the boosters is being delivered by way of lipid nanoparticles, so you're adding more lipid nanoparticles with each injection, but the spike proteins remain active and distributed body-wide by the lipid nanoparticles and continue to produce things like amyloid protein fibers. And continue with this whole list that of novel contents in the spike protein, the 10 that I read here. All of this will be in the magazine, okay? This continuous production of spike protein manifests as 95% of the cause for the disease to act the way it does. I'm distilling this down. The pathology of the disease, COVID-19, all of the disease activities, the cytokine storm, the long COVID, the antibody-dependent enhancement, the autoimmune response, the neurological deficits, the cardiac deficits, the obvious respiratory deficits, and so forth and so on, ultimately leading to death. All of this is due to the continuous production and overproduction and distribution of spike protein. And it cannot be turned off. And each booster only makes it worse, to the point where the third, fourth, or fifth booster manifests as full-blown antibody response as an autoimmune disease. When you hear of the signs and symptoms of COVID-19, again, I'm distilling down, 95% of the cause of the illness and the actions of the illness are attributable directly to these novel contents of spike protein and the immune system response to the presence of the toxic lipid nanoparticles. I want to go back and read what I read earlier now. Messenger RNA vaccination has been shown to elicit T cell responses early on, and early T cell and binding antibody responses are associated with COVID-19 RNA vaccine efficacy onset of vaccine effect. Therefore, it is plausible that T cell mediated immune upregulation elicited by the COVID-19 vaccine may result in type 1 leprosy reaction. However, the exact pathophysiological basis of this heightened immunologic response leading to unmasking of leprosy remains to be elucidated. So what This early research is showing us, and we're going to dig deeper, is that people that are manifesting with COVID-19 are beginning to manifest the grievous sores, the noisome and grievous sores of leprosy. I'm going to go to the beginning of this very short paper. Again, multi-bacillary leprosy unmasked by COVID-19 vaccination. Unmasked means that this is being revealed. The leprosy was hidden, but it's almost as if the vaccine is triggering the visible manifestation of the otherwise hidden leprosy, type 1 and type 2. Introduction. Leprosy is a chronic disfiguring infectious disease. It is traditionally classified into either tuberculoid leprosy or lepromatose, multi-bacillary leprosy, which differ in the number of bacteria present in the skin and clinical manifestations. So I just want to stop there and say there is a tuberculosis aspect to this discussion as well. Okay. Patients in between the two types are classified as borderline. In the context of COVID-19 pandemic, patients with leprosy will also receive the COVID-19 vaccination. Here we describe a case of multibacillary leprosy unmasked by COVID-19 vaccination. Case report, a 24-year-old Indian man was admitted with swelling of the hands, feet, earlobes, and lips. He also had bilateral ankle pain and swelling. He developed symptoms 10 to 15 days after receiving the first dose of the Pfizer-BioNTech COVID-19 vaccination. His medical history was significant for COVID-19 infection 6 months previously, from which he recovered without complications, as well as urticaria, so that's hives. So before he was vaccinated, he contracted COVID. That was 6 months prior to vaccination, and he successfully recovered with the exception of presenting with hives. On examination, he was noted to have diffuse and nodular edema of, that's swelling, of the ears, brows, and face. He had bilateral eyebrow hair loss. There was edema of the neck. He had conjunctival injection. However, his vision was unaffected. So the whites of the eyes, okay, they were turning red. His eyes were infected. And he had swelling of both hands. A biopsy of the ear and the dorsum of the left hand, that's the back side of the hand, showed a diffuse infiltrate of macrophages. Those are the white blood cells from the immune system. Skin smear results were positive from the ear, hands, and feet. A full blood count revealed bicytopenia, which is anemia and leukopenia. That means a low white blood cell count. Penia means small, okay? Anemia and leukopenia. The patient's symptoms and clinical and histological findings, that's your blood, were consistent with multibacillary leprosy. Given the temporal relationship, meaning the timing of the temporal relationship with COVID-19 vaccination 10 to 15 days previously, his reaction was likely unmasked by the COVID-19 vaccine. So the vaccine is revealing the underlying leprosy, okay? You have to ask the question. I'm parenthetically saying, you have to ask the question, what brought on the leprosy? Treatment was commenced. So they go through the typical steroids that they're using. Leprosy is a chronic infectious disease, primarily affecting the skin and peripheral nerves. The diagnosis of leprosy is often challenging as there is a wide array of clinico-pathological manifestations based on the host immune response. Clinically, leprosy in reaction can resemble hives, and leprosy can cause a secondary astigmatosis or xerostomia and may mimic eczema. So let's define a couple of things here. We said urticaria is hives, okay? Let's see, what do I have here? Xerosis, that starts with the X. I wonder if that is what the WHO is referring to when they called it Disease X and called it a placeholder name. I'll spell it, X-E-R-O-S-I-S. Refers to abnormally dry skin or membrane, such as those found in the mouth or in the conjunctiva of the eye, the whites of the eye, okay? Let's see. Did I do that one, I wonder? Okay, I don't think I did that one. Anyway, we'll move on. The clinical features of leprosy are often determined by the host response to leprosy bacilli, where patients with tuberculosis leprosy demonstrate T-cell immunity and delayed type hypersensitivity to M. leprae, while patients with lepromatosis leprosy exhibit abundant antibody-mediated inflammatory responses but minimal T-cell responses. Now, they get into Pfizer here. The Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine contains lipid nanoparticle-formulated nucleoside-modified RNA, which encodes for the SARS-CoV-2 spike protein. This triggers an immunologic response leading to the formation of SARS-CoV-2 neutralizing antibodies. The vaccine can generate significant titers, that's levels, of neutralizing antibodies and upregulate T-cell responses within 2 to 4 weeks of inoculation. To trigger adaptive immunity, a vaccine requires both a pathogen-specific immunogen and an adjuvant to stimulate the innate immunity that provides the cellular signals required for T-cell activation. So again, if you're going to call something a vaccine, it must be derived from the virus itself. Thus, the vaccine and the virus are identical. So you have to have both a pathogen-specific immunogen and you have to have an adjuvant. The Pfizer-BioNTech messenger RNA serves as both the immunogen and adjuvant upon entry into dendritic cells. So those would be healthy cells, okay? Leading to cellular activation and production of type 1 interferon and other inflammatory mediators, with prime differentiation of CD4 and CD8 effector T cells. I mentioned those earlier, with production of CD4 follicle helper T cells that promote differentiation of B cells into antibody secreting plasma cells. Okay, this is all the immune system response. And this all folds into the cytokine storm discussion. Studies have shown that vaccination can induce production of neutralizing antibodies for several months. Delayed large local reactions to the Moderna messenger RNA vaccine were reported in case series of 12 patients. Proposed to be delayed type or T-cell mediated hypersensitivity reaction. This process is similar to the immune reconstitution inflammatory syndrome seen in HIV patients following immune reconstitution, mediated by upregulated CD4 and CD8 T cell responses. Okay, I'll move on. Clinically, our patient did not have fever or myalgia, which is muscle soreness, or malaise, which is being fatigued. He had no lesions or arrhythmia notice them, or systemic symptoms. In other words, he didn't have anything on this, anything erupting on the skin. He was therefore clinically diagnosed as having type 1 leprosy reaction. In type 1 leprosy reaction, there is a hypersensitivity reaction that is clinically characterized by urticarial swelling of leprosy skin lesions. So again, this is the hives. Hand edema, the swelling, observed in our patient may occur in both type 1 reactions and type 2 leprosy reactions. Type 1 reactions represent the most common form of reaction and are usually seen in borderline leprosy and triggered by therapies, comorbidities, and pregnancy. The underlying pathophysiological basis of type 1 leprosy reaction is related to T-cell mediated inflammatory responses. So here the focal point is, how did the immune system respond to both type 1 leprosy, which was hidden because there was nothing manifesting until mild form of hives began to manifest, and then later the nodules of leprosy began to, that's type 2, began to manifest. The central focus here is the T cell production by the immune system. Okay, CD4 and CD8 T cell response. That's the inflammatory response. Remember, inflammation is the production of these large cells, white blood cells, macrophages. That's the inflammation, the antibodies, the macrophages. These are T cells in the inflammatory response. So you can have inflammation in the lungs, as you would find with tuberculosis and pneumonia. You can also have inflammation manifest on the skin, as in the case of type 1 and 2 leprosy. So what they're talking about here is that there is a relationship between leprosy and the vaccines for COVID. The tie-in, the connection, is the production of CD4 and CD8 T cells in an manifesting as in an inflammatory presentation, inflammation. Now, I don't think anybody has been talking. I want to credit my wife for finding this paper. I was busy doing other things, looking at disease X and looking at Ebola while she's looking at leprosy. Welcome to the Patch household. Nonetheless, I think even the preliminary information we have demonstrates that scientists know full well that leprosy is going to begin to manifest in the vaccinated. Takes me all the way back to the beginning in our discussion of the inverse black swan event, and properly defining a black swan event that is anticipated, disease X. The WHO is saying all over the place, and the WEF, Bill Gates and the like, it's not if, it's just a matter of when the next pandemic will manifest. They know leprosy is going to manifest. They know Ebola is going to manifest. I make the conjecture that it will be Ebola along with leprosy. I think it's already fairly evident that leprosy will present in the vaccinated. As I dig deeper into Ebola, as I will present a little bit here tonight, it would not surprise me, because it's one of the items listed by the WHO for the next pandemic. Ebola, mutated COVID, Zika virus, and the like. They're going to have a cocktail. I'm not going to call it a cocktail party. They're going to have a cocktail as the disease X that's going to manifest. Before I dive into Ebola, just briefly, I would like us to pause for a moment and think about what it's going to be like in the world when people realize that they have leprosy, that they have Ebola. One way to focus in on how that reaction may be is to think about the supply chain. What will happen to the global supply chain? What will happen to the distribution of food, medical supplies? What will happen to the ability for people to work, to be employed, to earn a living? Give me a moment. Notes here. I was speaking to one of our subscribers in the United Kingdom in England today. And she had made mention to me, we got on the topic of the illegal immigrants into England. And she made mention of something I had not heard, but she had indicated that if people continued, and this was the discussion was illegal immigrants coming to England by way of France, coming across the English Channel, that if they were caught, if they were arrested in England, that England would send them to Uganda, in Africa, in Uganda of all places. And I said, well, this sounds rather odd. Why would they pick Uganda? And we didn't, neither of us had a ready answer for it. I wouldn't necessarily want to go to Uganda. I doubt any of the immigrants would want to go there. They want to go to England and get all the freebies and join all the others that went before them into their slums and their enclaves and their ghettos where other illegal immigrants have come in to destroy the United Kingdom, to destroy England in particular, to destroy virtually all of Europe, Norway, Sweden, Finland, Germany, France, Italy, Greece, I mean, all the way down through Europe and Eastern Europe. I shouldn't leave the Eastern areas untouched. We all know what the reason for all this is. I won't digress too far into that. But Uganda. So I'm going to read about Ebola here just for a second, and then we'll talk about Uganda. Ebola virus disease, EVD, formerly known as Ebola hemorrhagic fever, is a rare but severe, often fatal disease and illness in humans. The virus is transmitted to people from wild animals and spreads in the human population through human-to-human transmission. The average fatality rate is around 50%. Now, it's rather gross, so I'm not going to get into reading about Ebola itself. It's familiar enough to all of you that I won't take the time to do that. But I want to show you the connection. This is from the WHO. On September 20th, 2022, Uganda declared an Ebola disease outbreak caused by the Sudan Ebola virus species after the confirmation of a case in the Mubendi district in the central part of the country. It was the country's first Sudan Ebola virus outbreak in a decade and a fifth of this kind of Ebola. In total, during this outbreak, there were 164 cases, 55 confirmed deaths, and 87 recovering patients. WHO and partners supported Ugandan health authorities from the outset of the outbreak, deploying experts, providing training and contact tracing, testing and patient care, as well as building isolation and treatment centers and providing laboratory testing kits. On 11 January 2023, Uganda declared the end of the outbreak. Because this outbreak was caused by the Sudan Ebola virus, one of six species of Ebola virus against which there are no approved therapeutics and vaccines, WHO worked with partners, including vaccine developers, researchers, and donors, and the Ugandan health authorities to identify candidate therapeutics and vaccines that could be included in the trials. Okay, so we'll go on from there. Now, it's pure supposition on my part, but why would England send people specifically to Uganda? To my knowledge, they're not sending people to other countries other than Uganda. Perhaps it's because of Uganda being noteworthy for Ebola that it appears to be a threat to people to discourage them from illegally entering England. That, hey, we're going to send you to a place where you're going to contract Ebola is the threat. That's what I'm surmising. Nonetheless, it just seemed really odd to me. Uganda, why? Well, I had been reading about Ebola. And then the connection kind of hit me. I went, wow, that's pretty nefarious. So let's extrapolate that theory a little further. Maybe Uganda will be blamed and the illegal immigrants being shipped there, immigrants from other countries, not from Uganda, that will precipitate a so-called outbreak of Ebola. Perhaps this will be the claimed causality for Ebola and leprosy causing the noisome and grievous sores, manifesting as disease X and the new plandemic. It is a plandemic. If this treaty is signed by over 100 countries in May, maybe following the signature of that, which bears the force of law in the countries that sign this treaty, there will be a rapid crackdown. They talk about medical surveillance and rapid response and rapid quarantines. Maybe this is what will bring on the inverse black swan event, blaming the immigrants that are forced into Uganda and forcing an outbreak of Ebola. I don't know. I'm just putting it out there for consideration. So I mentioned the infrastructure and the workers and all of this beginning to collapse. The medical professionals, a lack of medical professionals already. and a lack of available beds in hospitals and hospital capacities already. And we haven't even arrived at disease X. The surges that are going to occur in the hospital system, in the clinics, the doctor's offices, the surges in terms of demands for medications, bandages, and other medical supplies. That not only is there a demand, but there's nothing to resupply it because the supply chain system will go down with disease X. The response post-treaty in May will be a fast action response. This is how the WHO terms the reaction to the results of medical surveillance. As we saw with COVID, when it was novel COVID-19, novel coronavirus 2019, and then it became SARS-CoV-2 and the disease COVID-19, they were very quick to declare a pandemic when there were only 110 on a global basis, 110 confirmed cases of COVID. They declared a pandemic. This is what the WHO calls their fast action. And they say right in the treaty, they're not going to wait for this to be widespread. They're going to do the same thing. Early detection through medical surveillance will be their justification for fast action, which means quarantine and a whole host of other things. Remember, this is timed for the peaked reaction of the global population. You always need to keep that in mind in the big picture. Everything that we are seeing, from farmers protesting in the city streets in England, France, Germany, Italy, all of these things, Ukraine, etc., all of these things being peaked. The big picture is they're peaking reaction in problem, reaction, solution. Again, this so-called black swan that I'm calling an inverse black swan, the disease X, the WHO is saying it will be 20 times worse than what we experienced with COVID. They are predicting 50 million deaths. So again, critical thinking, logic dictates, how can you predict 50 million deaths? How can you predict that it's 20 times worse than COVID? The answer is they already know what the disease will be, what the inverse black swan is going to be. And I maintain it's going to be a combination of things. Spike protein, lipid nanoparticles, amyloid protein fibers, Ebola, leprosy. It's going to be a cocktail for which they will then present the microneedle ray patch delivering their final solution. That's an appropriate label, is it not? The final solution. If this is going to manifest, and it will, I don't think 50 million will be the figure. It will be a third of mankind will be the more accurate figure. You may have 50 million attributed to disease X, but you also have wars and rumors of wars. You have a supply chain breakdown and people fighting for survival. You have people who are manifesting with leprosy and Ebola. What's that going to do in the general population? We talk about martial law and civil war and civil strife and all of these things and sleeper cells. Just imagine people manifesting with these diseases, these noisome and grievous sores, what the chaos is going to be that results in a third of the population being killed, as the Bible tells us. The WHO claim that in response to this disease X event, that their goal is to produce a vaccine within 100 days of the declaration, thus the identification of the plandemic. 100 days. I'll say the same thing that I said about SARS-CoV-2. It was in silico, designed in the laboratory, and concurrent to the virus were the vaccines. Why would they not already have the vaccines when they created the synthetic virus? They're creating the synthetic vaccines from the very same material. Again, critical thinking, logic tells you, concludes, you're producing the virus in the laboratory, the vaccines are derived from the virus, so you have the vaccines in the laboratory concurrent with the virus. The two go hand in hand. So there's no 100 days. Remember, Satan has but a short time. There's not going to be a 100 days in, within a 100-day window. Somewhere in there, we're going to come up with this final solution. No, they already have it. Just like they already know what this disease X will consist of. They already have their final solution vaccine, which is not benevolent. This is meant to kill off the population. Their goal is to wipe out humanity. Not a third of it. They want to wipe out the Luciferian cabal. They want to wipe out humanity. What they don't understand is that Satan wants to kill off his Luciferian cabal as well. He wants to kill every human on the planet. He hates God and God's creation. So there's no 100 days that the WHO is declaring for the development and distribution of a vaccine. No way. No way. They already have it. Check my notes here real quick. Okay. I think we've got it. We're not going to go much longer here. I just want to kind of wrap this up tonight. Because really, this is the introduction. This is the food for thought. I just want you to leap off into a direction of research on your own between now and Tuesday. It's clearly evident to Kathleen and myself that this is what is going to manifest this year. As they continue to push the boosters, it's going to push the manifestation of leprosy and, I think, in pure conjecture, but I think also Ebola. I think their timing is from May of this year going forward, sometime after the treaty. Again, to be repetitive, but in the United States at least, a treaty, an international treaty, can only be ratified by the Senate. The president cannot enter into an international treaty on his own, by executive order. Biden has already said, he said this 2 years ago, he will issue an executive order unless the Senate ratifies it. They're talking about it literally. They were talking about it this past week in the Senate in the United States about this very treaty and about the dangers of the president trying to circumvent Senate hearings and Senate approval or non-approval to enter into this treaty, thus triggering a constitutional crisis on the part of the president issuing an executive order. So we have to ask ourselves, by the time we get to May, what will be the state of the nation? What will be the state of our cities and streets come May? We see what's going on with the farmer protests, which Kathleen and I wholeheartedly endorse. But we understand the big picture in this is that they're, as my friend from England was saying today, she said, yeah, they're stirring the pot. Absolutely, they're stirring the pot. In every country, here in the United States, we have truckers who have said for 24 hours, and this relates to Donald Trump and his court case and $354 million fine that he has to pay for some contrived charges, but nonetheless, truckers in this country saying for 24 hours, because of this court case and the ruling, they will not deliver anything to New York City for 24 hours. This is stirring the pot. We have the border that we've talked about several times, but now we have Governor Abbott in Texas saying, announcing, he had a press conference a couple of days ago, saying they're going to build a military base on the border for all of these state guard troops that are being sent by conservative, Republican, governor-led states that are in support of what Texas is doing regarding closing the border. They're going to build a military base for the logistical support of all these troops. Meanwhile, Arizona and California are wide open at the southern border. And the illegals are coming in, and the numbers that are being reported is upwards of a third of the illegals that are coming through are military-age Chinese males. Sleeper cells. So who knows what the state of the nation's going to be here and any other nation come May? Will there even be an opportunity? Will there even be any motivation, anyone that will care whether or not the Senate ratifies an international treaty with the WHO? It may not even be so-called on anybody's radar. And the president will issue an executive order entering into an international treaty illegally, violating the Constitution, but it may be that the country is in such a disarray by May that nobody cares. I don't know. I'm not trying to foment fear. I'm just throwing it out there ahead of time so that you take it in and you consider it. We don't operate by a spirit of fear around here. We consider these things. The Bible tells us to be sober-minded. We are presenting this in a sober fashion for you to consider in a sober fashion. We talk about prudent preparation. Well, that begins with your mind and your spirit. It begins with your relationship with the Lord. That's how you operate in a sober-minded fashion. You know that, I know that. So we don't operate by a spirit of fear. But we are watchmen on the wall. We are watching what's going on. That's why I present this information to you, for your consideration. What to look for. What to anticipate. Anyway, going to wrap up a little bit early tonight. I want to thank you all for your fellowship, your friendship, your tremendous support in keeping this platform up and running, our ability to communicate with you and for you to communicate with us. It astounds me every single day. Kathleen and I, we totally every single day operate in a spirit of complete gratitude to all of you. We just pray that we are truthful, accurate, and that we provide information that is tangible and useful and practical to you in your everyday walk of life with the Lord. Thank you all, and God bless you, and good night.